Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Bob. 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 Maluga, Luga, 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 Luga.
Why don't I just call you Bob?
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, January 24, 2023, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. How you doing? I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 734 of the Biden-Harris administration, 651 days until the 24 presidential election. You can find me on Instagram. The Bob Seska is my handle on Instagram. Twitter, it's BobSeska_go. Our Patreon is BobSeskaShow.com. And look, it's Buzz Burbank with the news.
Yeah. You say Buzz Burbank.
I won't sign it.
You've said it all.
Hi.
I'm not signing any damn visitor logs, okay?
God damn it.
Sorry, someone tried to make me sign in.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. He is, of course, Bob. I'm Buzz, and you may remember us from our roles on Hannah Montana.
I remember that.
Remember?
Show.
You yes. were the understanding counselor, and I was the crusty janitor. That was so.
That's exactly what it was, yes.
Hey, we also want to clarify that we have never been, Bob and I have never been drag queens, okay? We were young and had fun at a festival. Republicans have proposed a 30% national sales tax, a 30% national sales tax. Economists worry that this could drive up the price of a Republican.
See, they can be bought is the idea.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Hey, did you see it? Trump got fined $1 million for his revenge lawsuit against Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
So legally now, he's got her right where she wants him. And experts are warning us. You know what? They always do that, don't they? Experts are always warning us about something.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Experts are now warning us about the dangers of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. But I think we're going to be okay. We're used to hearing it from Republicans.
I'm surprised I haven't heard that joke before. That's great.
In Australia, they have found the world's biggest toad. Maybe you've heard about this. Yeah. 6 pounds this thing weighs. Six wow. pounds. Here's what you didn't know. It immediately got a seat on the House Oversight Committee.
It's about time.
And on a sadder note, we lost the great David Crosby this past yes. week. He, of course, was most famous for co-founding the legendary group Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Santos.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
All right, kicking off a brand new week with a great Rocky Mountain mic. Here we go.
I've had enough of the cinema girl. I can be happy the rest of my life without the cinema girl. She dreams she'll be president. She is a big wow. My dog has a better chance of winning the White House than Cinema Girl. Big Pharma sent her money. Now she wore a vest made from cow. She doesn't stand a chance. She got too big for her pants. Yeah.
Rocky Mountain Mike, Rocky MNC, and Mike on Twitter. Yes, indeed. That's a classic right there because
The Rocky Mountain Mike Orchestra. Be sure and follow him on YouTube. I do, and because he's got videos and all these great songs and everything there. Yeah, great job,
yeah.
as always.
Yeah, just search for Rocky Mountain Mike when you go to the YouTube. Mm-hmm. And Kyrsten Sinema will now be running against Ruben Gallego for...
How do we feel about this? Are we Senate. Worried? Are we worried about splitting the Democratic vote? What's going to happen here, do you think?
I'm always worried about that. And I'm genuinely concerned that we're going to see a split vote, which will advantage the Republicans. Hopefully, Ruben Gallego will dominate enough that Kyrsten Sinema Hopefully. Won't even be a factor as the independent candidate. But we'll see. She's got
the money.
Yeah, it's way too early to tell. But this is the same thing that Joe Lieberman went through years ago. She knew that if she ran as an independent, then the Democrats would be hesitant to do anything because they'd want to split the vote. Exactly kind of what we're concerned about here in Arizona. But Ruben Gallego is plowing forward. And his yes. first ad out of the shoot was genius. You just go to Ruben Gallego's Twitter yes. account, watch yes. his first video, his first commercial.
He's presenting himself as a very down-to-earth guy, and I think that's going to be important if he hopes to capture moderate votes and perhaps even some Republican votes
yeah.
in addition to Democrats. I hope he's not painted as being too progressive. I think we can expect that from the well-funded Kyrsten Sinema campaign as it comes along. But Democrats, I think, are very excited about this opportunity to get a real Democrat in that seat as opposed to the faker, Kyrsten Sinema.
Going back to your monologue real quick, going back yeah. to the news, you mentioned yes. something about how we were drag queens, or what did you say? We weren't drag queens?
I denied that we had yeah. been drag queens and said we just had some fun at a festival. That was Santos' excuse.
Yeah, well, about 30 years ago, right about now, I was an intern on the Don and Mike show, as you yes. remember, Buzz. And
I do.
As part of my initiation into that circle, I'll never forget. It was the day after Bill Clinton's first State of the Union address. They brought in the makeup artist to the stars, whose name I don't remember.
Right.
And my assignment was to get dressed up in full makeup, full like a wig, the artificial eyelashes, all of it. Then to go with Chris Ann, I think, to like Silver Spring, Maryland, and stand on a street corner giving out wrestling tickets. Rocket. That was my assignment. And, you know, it was such a disaster. First of all, I never looked at myself in the mirror. And then when I got back to the radio station, I was like praying the whole way back that they would lose the tape of that show. And then I got back and Diana was still there. And I said, "You didn't tape that, did you? You didn't record any of that." She said, "Oh, no, we lost the tape. We can't even do a best of." Thank you. Thank God that yeah, will get destroyed for all time.
And you had somewhat romantic designs, let's say, on the young woman who drove you to that appearance. As I recall, you were Frankenfurter sort of attractive.
That's probably it. And I'm so glad I didn't see myself.
I've always liked tall women, so, you know.
Frankenfurter attractive. That's possibly the name of today's show. Also, I have exclusive audio of that 6-pound toad.
Really?
Yeah. It's an amazing thing. I didn't realize that I would be the only
picture.
One. Yeah, that yeah, I would yeah. get the audio. Like, really? There's photographs going around all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and when they found that 6-pound toad, it was making this noise.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey.
Singing.
If you refuse me, honey, you'll lose me. Then you'll be left alone, oh baby.
Top hat.
And tell me
spats. Yeah, yeah.
And yet it bore a striking resemblance to Mitch McConnell, I thought. So.
Yeah, funny. That's obviously from the Warner Brothers Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
Frog,
I love that. Yeah. I'm trying to remember something. Jay Frog. I don't remember his name.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But just kept singing that song, which I find absolutely hilarious. Doing yes. that little dance. Yeah, yeah. So we have something that will possibly stymie us after the show is over, but we're just going to move past that because it's possible that any second now we could hear about indictments against Donald Trump in Fulton County, Georgia.
Yes, we could.
So we're talking any minute now.
The hearing began at about the same time as the show, maybe a little earlier than this show did today. So we hope to hear during the show the judge's decision, the judge in this case, to decide whether or not to release the grand jury's report on election interference in Georgia. The grand jury itself, as I understand it, recommended release, but ultimately it's up to the judge. Simultaneous to that, and it could happen just as instantly, we're expecting indictments to be handed down by District Attorney Fannie Willis. And so this could be a very, very big day. Some of this, as Bob said, may happen during the show. Some of it may happen after the show. I'm going to think positively that we will hear during the show. I have, not to get us off track, but that's what I do. We have some other breaking news just in from CNN as we record this. About a dozen classified documents were found at former Vice President Mike Pence's Indiana home.
Oh, no! No!
And turned over to the FBI.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? That's okay. That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I took us off track for that.
That's well worth it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. After what do we had here now? 10 days of Republicans talking about how serious this is, that Joe Biden had maybe a dozen and a half documents in a couple of different places. And a lot of those documents weren't even marked top secret. OK, now, after all of that, they've basically rabbit season, duck season themselves into having to make the same charges against Mike Pence as well. Okay.
I would like to take credit for being first on repeating something I said last week. I've had a number of people say to me on social media, gee, how many other previous presidents, vice presidents, and members of Congress have, stuck something in a drawer? And and it goes back to what I said last week, and that is, maybe it's time to look at the National Archives, because as I saw somebody else point out on social media, county libraries do a better job of keeping track of their documents. Much of what is being returned to NARA is material they didn't even know was missing.
Yeah.
What kind of a library is that?
I know.
We need to take a look at that. Ultimately, that's where this is headed. I like the way this keeps going back and forth.
Yeah.
And it does take some of the heat off Biden, because now you've got Trump and Pence. Pence, however, did the opposite of what Trump did. Pence immediately called the FBI and said, we found some stuff, come get it.
Yeah, there's nothing that's likable about Mike Pence. However, this is one of those situations where he's not going to be an a-hole about it,
right,
like his former boss was. So, I mean, I don't know if there's anything indictable here. I don't see any serious issues arising out of this.
And that's the point.
Yeah, obviously.
So let's find Biden and Pence innocent of any wrongdoing in this, and get Trump for refusing to turn over the documents, hiding the documents, ignoring subpoenas, countering this in the public, making these denials and accusations and false flags that come from him. The difference between Trump and Biden and Pence, let's tie those together, is that one side was clean and one side was dirty. And it's been said that because of what's happened with Biden, now it's going to make it impossible for DOJ to go after Trump on this charge. Well, no, it isn't, because they are so very different.
Yeah.
Whether the American people can or will see the difference, because obviously the media has had a role in this, pollsters have had a role in this. I was furious over the weekend to see poll results that said most Americans believe that both Trump and Biden mishandled documents.
Mm-hmm.
This is further. How did they get that poll result? By equating the two in the media. The media equated it over and over again. And shocker, when they then asked the public about it, the public recited back what the media had dictated to them. It's just disgusting, the state of the media and how people are paying just enough attention to only hear the media's headlines.
It's probably a good idea for everyone to wrap their heads around the concept that possibly Trump will be charged with just some form of obstruction of justice. Regarding the cover-up after the fact.
And that's a huge crime in itself.
Yeah. Oh my God. Absolutely. So there's nothing to be sneezed at when it comes to obstruction of justice. On top of the fact that they lied to the FBI and on down the list. Also, you can make an argument that he was deliberately doing it. This wasn't a case where a couple of documents got shuffled into the wrong box or something like that.
He kept some as keepsakes. He stole them.
And, yes, I mean,
he
of kept course.
His story about the folders now. I didn't keep the top secret documents. I just kept the cool folders, souvenirs. Right. That's his latest thing. Well, it's just as plausible that he kept a love letter from Kim Jong-un for sentimental reasons well. And if he did that, that's stealing. You can't do it just because it has sentimental value. That doesn't allow you to take those documents. They're not his. He took them. And so in my mind, and in the minds of many people, I think, he stole them.
Here's a crazy what if for you, Buzz Burbank.
Okay. All right.
What if some of the documents that belonged in the folders, the empty folders that Trump had in his possession of Mar-a-Lago, what if some of the documents that belonged in those folders ended up in Joe Biden's garage next to his Corvette? I'm just saying there's a conspiracy theory going around that rogue Secret Service agents loyal to Donald Trump may have planted documents in and amongst Joe Biden's stuff. That's one of the conspiracy theories. I'm not necessarily saying I agree with that. It's just one of those things to keep that in your peripheral vision a little bit. You know what I mean?
So did rogue Secret Service agents plant documents at Mike Pence's house?
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely not. I know. So, yeah. I mean, that's kind of one of the things that debunks it. However, we do know that there are people who are loyal to certain other bad actors and so on who are still inside the federal government. We're going to talk about Charles McGonigal here in just a little bit.
Another huge story.
Yeah. So, I mean, ruling out these rogues inside the bureaucracy is not necessarily something that we should do. That's something that is absolutely going on. And so, and we heard throughout Trump's presidency that he was, and by the way, I just want to ease everyone's mind. I'm not saying that this is the case. I'm not agreeing with this conspiracy theory. I'm just mentioning that throughout the course of Donald Trump's single term, his one term in office, that he was busily replacing disloyalists in the bureaucracy with people who voted for him and who support him, support his MAGA agenda and all the rest of it. So that was something that we heard, papers of record reporting on during his presidency. Just throwing that out there, food for thought.
It was a time where this would be considered insane to propose such conspiracies. But thinking outside the box is sort of necessary these days because what's happening is outside the box. There's still risks involved with thinking outside the box like this. You could be very, very wrong to espouse a theory such as this. But it's kind of okay to wonder aloud because sometimes these speculations prove to be true.
Yes. So this guy, Charles McGonigal, he's the former special agent in charge of counterintelligence in the FBI's New York office. He's accused of working with Oleg Deripaska. We all remember that name from the Trump-Russia investigation. He was the aluminum king. He's been on the U.S. sanctions list since 2018. And according to NPR, McGonigal's involvement with the Russian billionaire Deripaska involved taking secret payments for investigating one of Deripaska's rivals. He also worked to get Deripaska off the U.S. sanctions list in violation of federal law, prosecutors said. The federal indictment unsealed on Monday charges McGonigal and Shestakov, who aided him. He's a United States citizen with Russian roots, obviously. Each one with one count of conspiring to violate and evade U.S. sanctions in violation of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, one count of violating the IEEPA, one count of conspiring to commit money laundering, and one count of money laundering. Each charge carries a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. Oh, fuck. And it's important to note here the timing of when McGonigal was upped to that position. He was appointed special agent in charge of counterintelligence division of the New York field office 3 weeks before Comey announced the laptop thing before the 2016 election. 3 weeks.
Right. And he's the guy. McGonigal is the guy who is responsible for Comey stepping out there. He's the guy who basically pushed Comey out there to make that bizarre announcement just before the election about Clinton's emails being investigated, after which they found no wrongdoing. This McGonigal guy had long been respected. And here's what people need to understand. This is a top guy in U.S. counterintelligence. Yeah. This is the one of the main dudes, if not the main. And it was his job to keep an eye spy on, Oleg Deripaska.
Yes.
Who acts as an agent of the Russian government. Well, not only did he not keep an eye on him, he did business with him. McGonagall apparently committed these crimes while he was the head of counterintelligence for the United States. He committed these crimes on behalf of Donald Trump, ultimately. He was behind the Clinton investigation. He had negative influence on the Mueller investigation. And then went to work for Oleg Deripaska afterward. Paul Manafort, Trump's 2016 campaign manager, worked with and for Oleg Deripaska for the longest time. And I believe it was Deripaska to whom Manafort passed the polling information from the Trump campaign. And then there's Mitch McConnell, which I want to add, who tried to get an aluminum plant built in Kentucky with the help of Oleg Deripaska. This is a huge, huge story, and it is about Russian influence at the highest levels of U.S. government.
Exactly. So here's another bit of interesting information regarding the timing of McGonagall becoming special agent in charge of the counterintelligence division.
Right.
27 days later, after he was appointed to that position, and 8 days, just 8 days before the 2016 election, the New York Times published this headline. Investigating Donald Trump, FBI sees no clear link to Russia.
Right.
I wonder if Charles McGonagall was the source for that story. Mm-hmm. I would wager a month's salary that he was. I also wonder if the reason James Comey stepped up and announced that Anthony Weiner laptop Hillary Clinton thing right before the election. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he did that because he was concerned McGonagall was going to leak it. Again, this is one of those things I'm just throwing it out there because the timing is super suspicious. And now that we know that McGonagall has ties, accused ties to Oleg Deripaska, that he conspired to do favorable things, including getting the sanctions lifted against Oleg Deripaska. It is super duper suspicious as far as I'm concerned. You can smell it like a fart in a car. This guy maybe did something to completely flummox the Trump-Russia investigation, at least in the early days. So
the alleged crimes of McGonagall here have presented us with a severe national security problem. It is possible that a number of U.S. intelligence agents working on behalf of U.S. intelligence have been killed because of the actions of McGonagall.
Yeah.
This is, of all the scandals that we've endured over the last few years, this is perhaps the deepest and scariest, and it goes to the heart of the Russia investigation that so many people have discounted at this point, have written off as, that never happened. No, it did happen, and we're beginning to chip away at that iceberg.
And if you start to consider that possibly, and I don't see anything in the reporting along these lines, but it's possible that Charles McGonagall has some sort of loyalty to Donald Trump's style, his ideology, his movement. It's possible that McGonagall and many other members of the federal bureaucracy, whether we're talking about FBI agents, people in the broader intelligence community, have already been brainwashed by right-wing media, have been absorbed into that bubble, and will only act on behalf of Donald Trump and their fascist, idiocratic ideology. And so you have to start to wonder, how many other Charles McGonagalls are there inside the FBI? How many investigations into Donald Trump? I remember just being absolutely confounded when all of the reporting that we were hearing leading up to the Mueller report, and especially that Bill Barr letter that preceded the Mueller report, all the reporting prior to that was absolutely leading toward some real-world collusion charges against members of the Trump team, certainly the Trump campaign, and then the Trump administration. And then everything started to just fall apart. It was like everyone's tires were slashed and just went.
And
the whole thing just kind of dissipated over the course of maybe a month or so between that Barr letter and the Mueller report. And so I really have to wonder, was this investigation completely undermined from inside the investigation itself? Because this guy was right there in the middle of it. I mean, the counterintelligence in that particular office, that was a big fucking deal when it came to Trump-Russia. And now we find out that he was acting on direct behalf of this enormous Russian oligarch who has very close ties to Vladimir Putin.
And apparently Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't overstate the size of this scandal. You can't overstate the threat to national security.
Right.
You can't overstate the, the depth of this scandal. This is like the worst thing that's happened.
Yes. It's a huge story. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a Trump-era scandal here. Someone who has, you know, maybe one or two hops from Donald Trump, Oleg Deripaska. You go to Trump to Paul Manafort to Konstantin Kilimnik to Oleg Deripaska. That's how the jumps go. I can't believe I just produced Konstantin Kilimnik after all these years. But
yeah, it's funny. You don't know if those Russian names are going to stick with you.
I know. I'm not sure if that neuron was obliterated at some point, but there it is. This guy, Sergei Shestakov, he's a U.S. citizen. He's a former Soviet and Russian diplomat and federal court interpreter. He's facing charges alongside McGonigal, as I was saying before. Prosecutors allege that Shestakov, 69, age 69, and McGonigal worked together to aid Deripaska. There's always someone else. There's like always a sidekick. You had Deripaska and, as I said, Konstantin Kilimnik working with Paul Manafort. You know, look, anyone who tries to tell you that the Trump-Russia thing was a hoax, that it just there's nothing there.
It's been forgotten.
Don't listen.
Because of the perfect phone call with Zelensky and the two impeachments and, you know, the Mar-a-Lago raid and everything that's happened since, everybody's forgotten the whole Russia story.
Yeah.
But it's still there, and no matter how hard you try to ignore it or forget it, it's back.
They're very, very good at changing the subject. But the subject always gets somehow changed back, doesn't it? And why this story is so important, because maybe we can finally take a look. We've got one of the perpetrators, possibly. Right. We've got someone who has direct ties to Oleg Deripaska, who could, under oath, reveal a lot more of what was going on. And it's just a matter of the traditional press covering it the way it ought to be covered, rather than appeasing Republicans by slow walking the whole thing.
I've been so disgusted. We've talked about before the media headlines that equated, that made what Joe Biden did. And again, inexcusable sloppiness. But we also know that he's not the only one in government who's done this. Not that that makes it okay. It's time for the archives to crack down, I think, a little bit, on itself. But it began with the media equating Biden and Trump. And then they have the gall, the unmitigated gall, to run a survey that finds, most Americans believe they're the same. Well, yeah, because that's how you painted it. Of course that's what they think. The crooked media, as I tweeted, wins again.
Yes, they do. And we've got more about the crooked media here in just a little bit, because the New York Times had to issue a correction on a headline that it posted about the debt ceiling. Yeah.
You mean an editor's note.
Editor's note. Yes, indeed. That's a great way to put it. Yes. It's very, very famous on the show. What was it, last week? The editor's note from last week?
Yes. Yeah. I have one for this week, too.
I just want everyone to know we didn't get it wrong. We were just trying to predict. I mean, I guess our prediction was wrong, but I think most people were kind of looking at somewhere down the road, maybe late summer, as when the shit would hit the fan.
At the time, that was the accepted truth. Nobody except maybe Janet Yellen knew otherwise, and she didn't say so until like the next day or so. But up to that point, no one believed. I mean, we were right in saying no one believed that we'd run out of money before September. Well, surprise.
Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the latest on the debt ceiling. And I want to mention something that Rachel had an exclusive about last night regarding George Santos. And obviously the shootings in California, two shootings in just a couple of days.
Can't ignore that.
And these are mass shootings, not just any ordinary shooting. And then in that context, I also want to mention another instance of trigger-happy cops. just going way out of their way to murder a suspect. You got to wonder what the hell is going on when it comes to training, when it comes to procedures, when it comes to the quality of people that are being hired as cops in these situations, or SWAT teams or what have you.
Very disturbing.
Yeah. And you wonder, too, whether there's a connection between trigger-happy cops and trigger-happy citizens. If we're seeing our police and, by extension, politicians using firearms as a way to solve problems, whether we're bombing people overseas or whether cops are murdering innocent people in their homes.
It's America's mental illness, and it affects and infects cops the same way it does everybody else.
Yeah.
As if there wasn't already a problem with cop culture.
Exactly right. And then on top of that, the moral influence to say that, oh, yeah, this is okay. Yeah, it's not a problem. Right. If you need to shoot first and ask questions later, that's the American way. Go for it.
Right. Second Amendment, buddy.
Yeah. That's the idea that a lot of people are getting from people of authority. And that needs to end. That needs to stop. We need to get back to a time when, oh, he got away is okay.
Well, I guess among our few victories in the field of gun violence, one of them is, I guess we've gotten so used to these shootings that Republicans no longer say that it's too soon to talk about guns.
Yeah.
At least they've dropped that BS. So maybe that's progress. We'll see. But there is more talk, firm talk from Democratic lawmakers this week about doing something about this. Illinois' assault rifle ban was upheld yesterday. So I think, you know, there's always an opportunity for change. Obviously, we have a Republican-controlled House that won't allow that, but there is a new momentum out there.
Yes, there is. Okay, so we're going to talk about that, and I want to get into just a couple of things from Diamond's funeral.
Very good.
So we'll talk about that and a whole lot more here coming right up on our big Tuesday show. Mm-hmm. All right. So if you're only listening to this part of the show, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts and so forth, you're only hearing the first hour of the show. There's an extra 20 minutes of show after the end credits roll at the end of every Tuesday and Thursday show. And it's all happening on our Patreon page. Of course, I'm talking about the Shadow Docket podcast at patreon.com/Bob Seska Show or, for brevity's sake, BobSeskaShow.com. Now, just to be clear what we're talking about in terms of what shows we put out there every week,
okay.
I don't know if I ever do this by way of a reset, talking about like what the show schedule is from Tuesday through Friday. So on Tuesday, it's me and Buzz on the free show, followed by the Shadow Docket that exclusively appears on the Patreon page.
Right.
Wednesday, there's an interview show, which is me interviewing someone who's in the news, someone who's written a book, a friend of mine. We have regular reoccurring guests like Cliff Schechter and Donna Halper. So that's a basic interview show, free, available to everyone on all the various podcast platforms. Thursday, it's me, Jody, and David on the free show. That's followed by the Shadow Docket, also with me, Jody, and David. And then on Friday, it's the after party with me and Kimberly that appears on our Patreon page. So that's your weekly schedule. The Shadow Docket, as I was saying, is a completely unfiltered, commercial-free continuation of everything we didn't get to on the free portion of the show.
Plus, we talk about personal stuff and some showbiz stuff, too.
Yes, absolutely. Anything goes. It's sort of like, in a sense, it's sort of a mini after party. It gives you a sense, a taste of what the after party is on Friday.
Without the refrigerator sex.
Exactly right. There's no refrigerator sex, I'm sorry to say. Maybe discussions of it
someday,
at my expense, yeah, but generally speaking, no. Buzz and I are not having sex in the refrigerator. The other thing about the Shadow Docket is it's only going to cost you pennies per episode. The Shadow Docket drops every Tuesday and Thursday after the free shows, and it's only going to cost you $5 per month. That's the subscription level that includes the Shadow Docket. Plus, you get access to the Patreon page and the comments, and you get access to the Patreon app and all the rest of it, and you're going to be supporting this fully independent podcast. So don't miss out. That's BobSeskaShow.com. Bookmark it. Send it to all your friends, why don't you? And we thank you.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska!
Betsy Aid and Well-Known Strangers as a brand new single. I love it. Holy shit. This one just dropped. It's a song called I Don't Owe You. Yeah, Betsy Aid, Well-Known Strangers, one of our faves here on the show. Link in the description to download this music. Get going. Get it now. BobSeska.com/music to submit your work to the show. Thank you for doing that. All right. Where do we go from here? What do we talk about now?
There's so much. Kevin McCarthy's undying love for Marjorie Taylor Greene. That's one.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And she weighed in with the conspiracy theory about COVID and the vaccines. Uh-huh. She
and
wants
that's all okay now. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to get into that here in just a second. I would talk about real quick what Rachel Maddow was saying about George Santos. I guess she had an exclusive last night saying that George Santos once claimed that he was a victim of an attempted murder.
Recently claimed, yes.
Recently, and he's under police protection. I guess that the idea there was, oh, the liberals are coming to kill me. Is that it?
I think that's the implication. He didn't come right out and say that. He conducted the interview. He speaks. One thing, actually, he can do. A true thing about George Santos is he can speak Portuguese. And
wow.
He was on a Brazilian podcast, and he spoke Portuguese, and as did the host, and he was asked and answered questions. He talked about being robbed in the middle of Fifth Avenue and 55th Street in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. They said he was robbed of his briefcase, a number of items, and his shoes. And the host incredulously says, you were robbed of your shoes in the middle of Fifth Avenue? Yes, I was. And then and he mentions that his home had been burglarized or vandalized, I think he said, and that there had been an attempt on his life. He may have also claimed at some point that he was under New York. In fact, he did claim he was under the protection of New York City police at the time of those that death threat. And so far, NYPD has not responded to a request for the public records on whether or not he was being provided that protection. But knowing Santos, probably another lie. So this appears to be the latest lie of this guy. Dana Milbank just did a great rundown in the Washington Post of the lies of George Santos.
Oh, do tell.
It's nicely blended. He adds at the top that on Thursday, Santos was denying reports he'd performed in drag in Brazil under the name Katara Ravash. But to summarize, says Dana, he didn't attend Horace Mann School, didn't attend Baruch College, where he also didn't have a volleyball scholarship that required him to get two knee replacements, didn't get an MBA from New York University, and didn't work for Citigroup or Goldman Sachs. He didn't own 13 rental properties or have employees who died in the Pulse nightclub shooting. His nonprofit, Friends of Pets United, did not save 2,500 dogs and cats, although it is accused of stealing $3,000 from a GoFundMe for a disabled veteran's dying service. dog. He is not a Jew. His grandparents were not Holocaust refugees, and they fled neither Ukraine nor Belgium. His mother wasn't a finance executive, and she wasn't at the World Trade Center, nor apparently even in the country during the 9/11 attacks, which didn't claim her life. His real name may or may not be George Santos or Anthony Zabrowski or Anthony DeVolder. He may or may not be American-born, have a brain tumor, be biracial, have a husband, be a longtime openly gay man, or have attended a Stop the Steal rally in a stolen Burberry scarf. Thank you.
Dana Milbank. Yeah.
Running down the lines of George Santos. Nicely compacted there by him, I thought.
Yeah. Holy shit. A couple things on this. I want to go back to the stolen shoes. You know, there was an episode of Sex and the City where Sarah Jessica Parker's shoes are stolen in a mugging.
Maybe this is where he got it. Yeah.
Mugger confronts her and says, give me the Manolos. And she just take off her shoes and then walk home in her bare feet.
You don't think he thought of this himself, do you?
No. That's what I'm thinking. Like, he got it from Sex and the City, maybe. Here's where I am with George Santos right now. I get the distinct impression that Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans, especially the House Republicans, need him to stick around.
They do.
Because he's a distraction from what the awful official business is that they're doing with regard to the debt ceiling, with regard to all these investigations. It's getting us talking about George Santos. And I will say that it's valid to talk about George Santos. Sometimes the distraction is worthy of discussion. That's what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
And this is certainly worthy of it.
And obviously not the most important story, but important enough. McCarthy needs that vote. And I hate to invoke the name of Woody Allen here, but in his stand-up comedy years in the early 1960s, the guy was hilarious, in my opinion. And he had a joke about, he said, growing up, my brother was insane. He thought he was a chicken. We thought about getting him help, but we needed the eggs. Kevin McCarthy needs the eggs. Kevin McCarthy needs that vote from George Santos, so he's standing by him, not quite as closely as he's standing by Marjorie Taylor Greene, but Kevin McCarthy needs that vote, and that is why George Santos is so far still there. That could change as criminal investigations of him continue.
Well, every think piece, every article that lists all of his lies is one fewer article we're writing about Kevin McCarthy and the debt ceiling and these investigations and the Rodeo Clown Caucus. I'd say George Santos is the head rodeo clown at this point.
By the way, I was reading online a conversation between some of my people, you know, some of my friends online, and somebody referred to it as the Rodeo Clown Caucus, and someone else took offense because he himself is a rodeo clown and didn't
think that was a god.
So I actually heard from a rodeo clown that he's not happy to be compared to the insane House Republicans. He said rodeo clowns have much more discipline than these folks do.
Hashtag not all rodeo clowns. Sorry, okay, right. We got to make that clear now. Huh?
Exactly. And I've been eager, obviously, because I've hinted at it a couple of times to get this in. The shocking words of Kevin McCarthy this week on the subject of Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is now driving. He may be the figurehead Speaker of the House, but she's the one who's operating the pedals.
She is.
Who's driving this thing. And this week, McCarthy said, and I quote, "I will never leave that woman. I will always take care of her."
Oh, my God.
He added, "She reminds me of my friends from high school and that we're going to stick together all the way through." Kevin McCarthy has completely sold out to Marjorie Taylor Greene because she got him elected after 14 tries as Speaker of the House. And so he has this undying. And that puts her in the driver's seat. She's now pulling the strings. This is the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's not a fringe crazy anymore, as if she ever were. McCarthy admires her, by the way, because of her brand, MJT. He thinks she's done an incredible job of marketing herself. He greatly admires her marketing. And the way she can advise him on what the far right is thinking so that he can respond accordingly. But make no mistake, she is in charge. And so that's why it's so significant that Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House, would say, I will never leave that woman. I will always take care of her.
He has no idea, does he? He has no idea that the more Marjorie Taylor Greene, the more we see of MTG on Twitter and in the news, the better it is for Democrats. I'm just saying, the same goes.
I think I said MTG, but thank you.
Regardless, I think everyone knew what you meant.
McCarthy even said Democrats had AOC, we have MTG. This is great.
Yes, because everyone has initials. Shocking.
Right.
Anyway, so that's always positive. It's good. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, all these people, Lauren Boebert, they're scaring away independent voters. They're scaring away swing voters. Yes, so please keep going, Republicans. You're doing great.
Exactly.
More solemn note here, this shooting in Half Moon Bay, California, seven killed in two related shootings at a mushroom farm and a trucking firm. And then there was the shooting at Monterey Park where 11 were killed. And obviously the questions are the same as they always are. How much profit did firearm manufacturers make on these shootings? What was the profit margin on all those bullets? What was the profit margin on that? Look, you know what it looked like? It looked like an Uzi. I think the United States is the only Western society where it's legal to own one of those things.
Yeah, Second Amendment, Bob.
Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah,
so,
we had the shooting in the Los Angeles suburbs, Monterey Park, and then also in the lovely coastal community of Half Moon Bay in Northern California. Mm-hmm. Southern California shooting now appears to be a case of jealousy. The Northern California shooting now appears to be a case of workplace violence.
Yeah.
In addition to that, obscured by that, Sunday morning, a shooting of eight people in Shreveport, Louisiana, all members of a family, three of them children. I don't know what the death toll was there, but I know eight people were shot. I know the usual dozen people or so were shot in Chicago over the weekend. And today, just before we began this show, in Yakima, Washington, at a convenience store, three people shot dead, the gunman on the loose. We are averaging two or better, we're averaging two or more mass shootings every day. We had 600 some mass shootings last year, 365 days in the year, 600 some shootings, nearly two a day. We have already beaten that pace in 2023. Somebody commented, is this like the 800th week of January by now? Yeah. Because it feels like it. And these shootings have a lot to do with it. This is all about gun culture, as Bob alluded. Mm-hmm. Yep. The hundreds of rounds of ammunition found at the home of the Southern California shooter. He had at least two guns with him the night of the shooting, and they found more in his house. It's this gun culture. It's about the guns. And as I said, it's riled Democrats up again that they're making a lot of noise and a big push. We'll see what happens.
We have been convinced, and I say we in terms of we all know who we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We have been convinced that the best way to solve problems is at the point of a gun. That when you when you can't resolve your problems using words or whatever, any sort of thought process, then you pick up a gun and you shoot at your problem. That's the American way.
Yeah, whether it was that domestic shooting in Louisiana, apparently, or a workplace shooting in Northern California, or a jealousy shooting in Southern California, or a hate shooting in New York State. It's just guns. Guns is the common factor in all of this.
Absolutely. And it's the common factor when it comes to some of these situations where suspects are being summarily murdered extrajudiciously. And we have another case of that in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Another horrendous video. We were talking about the Keenan Anderson video last week and a little bit the week before. This new video from North Carolina shows this disabled man. It looks like he was living in a double wide or a trailer.
Right.
And he's awakened in the middle of the night, crawls out of bed with his wife or his girlfriend. I'm not sure the relationship there. Answers the door, and the SWAT team immediately opens fire, guns, shoots him twice in the torso. Once in the chest, it looked like once in the stomach. So, shot this disabled man who was unarmed and complying with what the SWAT team was asking him to do. His name was Jason Harley Kleffer. I think that is Kleffer is the last name. Told him to go outside, and then they shot him as soon as he opened the door. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. because he did nothing wrong. And the amazing thing about it was there was surveillance video the whole thing. There was a camera inside his trailer showing the point. He's getting out of bed, turning on the light. And then after he was shot and dragged out, the cops went in. First of all, SWAT team looking like they're in the military, looking mm-hmm. like they're, you know, joining in the siege of Fallujah or something
you've
like that.
You've talked about before the militarization of the police. We've all seen it.
Yeah. Yes, yes. So it looks like these guys are Marines in the green zone of mm-hmm. Iraq or something like mm-hmm. that. So as soon as they go in, they notice the camera and say, oh, fuck, this is being video recorded. And they turned out the lights. But, of course, the camera is set up with infrared so you can still see what was going on.
And police violence affects black men disproportionately.
Yes.
Let me say that up front.
Absolutely accurate.
Having said that, the victim in this case was white. In Memphis, we just had 5 police officers fired for excessive use of force on a Memphis man who died in their custody, zapped by tasers and beaten, brutally beaten. All 5 of the attacking officers were black, as well as the victim. So at a certain point, although blacks are disproportionately more victimized by police brutality than whites.
Yeah.
We see that the problem is maybe perhaps more the gun culture, the trigger-happy culture of police, of law enforcement, and as Bob has pointed out in the past, the militarization of police.
Yeah. Well, then you combine all of that with racial profiling. And that's where it gets really toxic for people of color.
Right.
And so while the poor training is still there, while the shoot first and ask questions later procedures are still there, then it gets amplified when you throw in racial issues, when you throw in judgment calls based on how the appearance of the suspect.
When I was a very young reporter, oh, here comes Buzz with an old story again. When I was a very young reporter, one of the things you do, I think this is probably pretty common, is you do a ride-along with the police.
Yeah.
And that has multiple purposes, but I certainly had my eyes on them. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any unprofessional behavior that night, but one of the cops confided in me, and I'll never forget his words. He said, because I was very young, I could have been like 19 or 20 when I heard this from a cop on a ride-along. He said, there's a very fine line between a cop and a criminal.
Yeah.
We're both in it for the adrenaline.
Interesting.
And that adrenaline is obviously a factor, and the testosterone factor as well.
Yeah,
there's male toxicity at work here as well. A gun. Got gun.
Yeah, and there are a couple of additional factors that the cops have nothing to do with. First of all, they're being trained in these procedures. They're being told that this is how you have to do it, otherwise you're going to lose your job. Mm. Or otherwise you're going to be killed. That's the training. That's how you learn to be a cop. You're being told that deadly force or, you know, using your knee on someone's throat is the way you subdue them. And then everything spirals out of control. On top of the politics of it, first of all, an entire Republican Party that whenever, especially when they're painted into a corner, start demagoguing crime.
Second Amendment.
Yeah, exactly. Second Amendment crime. But it's mainly about, when they're talking about crime, it's mainly about black people.
Implied,
yes. Yeah, you always hear that.
Yeah.
When they mention gun violence, where do they go to? They go to Chicago. They talk about Chicago. Chicago is like ranked in the 20s, maybe even in the 30s, on the list of the most dangerous murder capitals in America. It's not even in the top 10, but they go there all the time. Chicago, look at all the black-on-black crime. It's all the blacks in Chicago. And the subtext every time a Republican mentions crime is black crime. It's never about
That's the subtext. Yeah.
Yeah, it's never about guys like what was his name? Jason Harley Kleffer. It's never about white guys in their trailer parks. It's always about the black guys. That's who they're talking about. They want their voters to think crime. Oh, yeah. It's black people. And adding immigrants. It's also undocumented immigrants who come in and behead innocent Americans and leave their heads in the desert or whatever the spooky tales of fear and shock happen to be.
I think the scale of hate for Republicans is blacks in first place, Muslims in second place, and Latin immigrants in third place.
Yes, indeed. And that's the drive behind all of this. That's why you see. And you know what? You can't rule out 9/11, too. The the overreaction to 9/11. I wrote about this in my book from, God, 100 years ago. Yeah. Where all of these small towns started to pick up surplus military equipment as part of Homeland Security grants that they received in the wake of 9/11 as possible counterterrorism measures. So you get all, that's where the militarization of the police comes in, where there was such a reaction toward
police departments, even in small towns, were then overstocked with the tanks or you know, vehicles similar to tanks and you know, personnel carriers, armor, you know, stuff that the soldiers use in the field.
Exactly.
Suddenly became street level. And this was after, especially after the first murders in the story in Missouri that got so much attention.
Apart from the fact that a lot of these guys who collect these giant arsenals of firearms, these hobbyists, eventually at some point are going to want to use one of them.
It's gotten so bad, many liberals have taken up firearms as well because they're afraid of all the conservatives with firearms at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even bleeding over onto our side, and I don't think people want that, but that's where we're headed. It's just become too accepted. We can't continue to move on from this. It's no other country on earth deals with this. No other country deals with this.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, I want to talk about the latest on the debt ceiling and the Republican plans as far as Social Security and Medicare.
Yes.
And I got a couple of clips of audio here from Diamond's funeral.
Right.
Remember last week, we played the audio of Donald Trump promoting his appearance at a funeral, and his appearance did not disappoint. And plus, the conspiracy theories around the COVID vaccine are now going fully mainstream, at least on the Republican side. So, and this is all connected. This is all related to what happened at Diamond's funeral over the weekend. Jesus Christ, these people. Yeah. Okay, quick break. Back with more show right after this.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Now the time has come to see the writing on the floor. When I finally look up, I'll know things better than before. 'Cause I was born for these days. I was born for these days. I was born for these days.
Oh, I love this song. This is Wall Singer. That song called Born for These Days, as you can probably tell. Yeah. Link in the description to support Wall Singer. Yes, indeed. Just what you do is you go to bobseska.com, you click on this episode dated 1/24/23, and you scroll on down and you'll find links for not only Wall Singer, but also Betsy Aid and the Well-Known Strangers. Support our independent recording artists here on the show.
Very nice.
Yes. Indie Music Countdown. Indie Music Countdown is back. It's back, coming up this weekend. It will drop probably Sunday or Monday, this coming up.
More rock, less talk.
Yes, in fact, no talk. More rock, no talk. There will be no talk. I'm just doing straight-up playlists. There'll be fun jingles and stuff like that in there. But as I've been saying, everyone loved the indie Christmas playlist and the format of that. So doing is just adapting that. So you can just listen to straight up every single song that we've played throughout the month of January. And again, that's coming up this month. And I'm not sure if it's going to be both on all of the podcast platforms and Patreon. I know it's at least going to be on our Patreon page, probably free. I don't know yet. It's my, I'm 99% certain I'm going to make it free on the Patreon page. Yeah. I haven't decided yet where it's going to go. Just one of those things. Do I push everyone to the Patreon page to get it? Maybe.
Please. Yeah.
Maybe.
Please. Please.
Yeah.
That's very nice. Listen, Bob, have you ever had a Watergate cake? Have you ever heard of it? Watergate cake?
Watergate cake? No, I've never heard of Watergate cake.
Well, Bob, then you'll want to stick around for the shadow docket today because yeah. I will tell you about my experience with Watergate cake and what that's all about.
Interesting.
And also, the Oscar nominations came out today. And as you know, I'm voting in the Screen Actors Guild Awards, and I've seen one of the biggest movies, Everywhere, Everything, All the Time, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
There you go. Name.
I'm, yeah. I'm being silly. I may have an alternate title for it, but Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is just swept the Emmy nominations with like 11. I'll talk a little bit about seeing that movie as well today in the Shadow Dog.
Okay, yeah. The Oscar nominations, did you mean? I think the Oscar nominations came out today, right?
They did, but I'm voting on SAG and so one of the SAG Award nominees as well.
Great.
Many of the same categories. So we'll talk about that because I've reviewed that movie and I'll give you my take on it.
I have a lot of catching up to do with all of those Oscar nominated movies.
Oh, we all do. Yeah. And I'm really just getting started. But as I see the big ones, last week I talked about The Banshees of Inisherin. And this week I'll talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Excellent. Coming up on the Shadow Dog at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Sign up for $5 a month. We'll see you there. All right.
Yeah.
Republicans, as predicted, are looking at cuts to Social Security and Medicare.
Yes.
Obviously, doy, and this is fine. If they want to talk about this and threaten this, they will probably lose more votes. However, the problem is, I don't think that they're going to vote to lift the debt ceiling. I think what they may do, and I almost said death ceiling. That's kind of it. It's like the death of the economy, I guess.
You're thinking of COVID, I think, now.
Yeah. How do the House Republicans vote to lift the debt ceiling? I don't see it happening. I just don't. And what's going to happen is just absolute economic calamity. That's why. That's where I'm sitting right now. I wish I had a more positive take on this.
When we first brought this up on the show, I predicted that this time the Republicans should be believed that they are going to go all the way with this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually a little less confident of that now, but that is where it would seem they would have to head. But I don't know. One of the proposals being floated now is to raise the retirement age. To raise the retirement age again, which amounts to a Social Security cut of 21%. That's a huge cut in Social Security. And the White House isn't going to stand for it. I've read an insider's view of how the White House is handling all this. And it's a game of chicken, to be sure.
Yeah.
But I'm putting my money on the White House on this. I think they have a good strategy for getting this done. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. The solution to Social Security is easy. What you do is you lift the cap on who has to pay into the Social Security Trust Fund. Remove it. I think it's up to incomes of $160,000 a year. Anyone making more than $160,000, they don't have to pay any Social Security tax on money they earn after the $160,000. So millionaires and billionaires only have to pay up to $160,000 into the Social Security Trust Fund. Everything else is, they don't have to pay those taxes.
All right.
But if they did, that would solve the problem immediately. And guess what? They could all fucking afford it. There's no doubt in my mind that Elon Musk would be able to afford having every cent of his income taxed for Social Security and Medicare.
But the only thing I'd ask, here's my dumb guy question. Since you're supposed to get out of it what you put into it, does that mean they're going to get more money on retirement?
They don't have
to. Rich?
They don't have to. They don't need it. Because what happens is if you have a more stable Social Security system, you have people feeling confident in their ability to continue to receive benefits, then they're going to be more willing to spend on the economy, which is going to benefit the millionaires and billionaires. You see what I mean?
But when did we begin to consider the greater good?
I mean, that's obviously the main thing. You consider the greater good and make sure that
of course it is.
Everyone's paying.
We don't always go that way.
No, absolutely not. So a group of GOP lawmakers has called for the creation of special panels. Mm-hmm. Let's call them death panels.
Yeah.
Might recommend changes to Social Security and Medicare, which face genuine solvency issues that could result in benefit cuts within the next decade. This is all according to the Washington Post. Others in the party have resurfaced more detailed plans to cut costs, including by raising the Social Security retirement age to 70, as you were saying, Buzz, targeting younger Americans who have yet to obtain federal benefits. The New York Times, I mentioned this earlier in the show, New York Times published, then deleted the following headline about the debt ceiling. Here was the headline. You can hear me saying this between sighs.
Yes.
Increasing the U.S. debt ceiling has increasingly been used as a political tool by both parties.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, both parties. First of all, using the word or variations of the word increasing twice in the same sentence.
Terrible.
Yeah. See also previous remarks about rank amateurs writing headlines and tweets and articles. Then again, it sometimes happens. But, you know, this is the New York Times. You get quality control in New York Times. You get vetting. You have editors looking at this shit. There's no excuse for seeing increasing and increasingly in the same sentence. But the point is that they're both sidesing this.
Right. That's what they do. That's what they're all about. I mean, just we need to point that out more and more and more, that the media you're seeing is all about both sides. Because why? Because they love a horse race. They love he said, she said. Mm-hmm. It's that conflict that media thrives on. And so anytime they can both sides anything, that's what they're going to do, because it's good for circulation, it's good for ratings, and it's good for clicks.
And then they had to issue a correction. So seconds later,
an editor's note.
Yes, exactly. Well, this is actually a correction. Ours was an editor's note.
I know.
But the correction went up. First, they deleted that poorly worded tweet. And then they said, an earlier tweet misstated the nature of recent debt ceiling showdowns. Mm-hmm. Both parties are responsible for the debt, which is partly true.
Right.
But only Republicans are using it as a political tool. We deleted the incorrect tweet. So at least there's that.
I'm sure they did not mention that 25% of that debt was run up during the Trump administration.
Yes.
Because of the tax cuts for the rich.
Yep. It's 25% of our entire national debt, all during the Trump years.
Correct. Yes.
So there it is. And you also have to bear in mind, too, that a considerable portion of the debt is investment in the United States, whether it's American citizens investing in the United States or foreign governments investing in the United States in the form of treasury bonds and other securities. And then, you know, it's a matter of paying our debt that's already been racked up. That's you make payments on that debt like anyone with a credit card bill. And what Kevin McCarthy wants to do is say, well, you know, instead, we're just going to take the credit card away and not pay the bills. This is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. And these are people who have no compunction whatsoever to maintain the full faith and credit of the United States. They're fine with this brinkmanship. They're fine with running right up to the last minute. And in fact, in this case, just running right past the deadline, whatever that might be, in June or however long Janet Yellen has said that she can use emergency measures to keep paying the bills. So this is one of those things where they're absolutely willing to let the economy crash because they know exactly who's going to be blamed. Now, whether American voters will accept that it's Joe Biden's fault is another story. I mean, it could backfire against the Republicans, but still, kind of calamity are we talking about here? Well, you know, they don't even have to let the debt ceiling expire. They don't even have to run out of money before the global financial sector starts to go, hey, you know what? Maybe we should stop using the dollar as the global monetary reserve currency. You know what I mean?
The very threat of this could set off a worldwide recession. millions of Americans could lose their jobs. The White House isn't budging on, they're not going to give up anything on Social Security. The bipartisan Senate isn't going to give up anything on Social Security. I don't know how this ends. I can't see it any other way than ultimately the House has to bend or give in, because this ploy isn't going to work.
No, it's not.
But the result, as you pointed out, could be very real. A very real disaster could come of this. The very threat of defaulting can hurt our credit and set off worldwide panic.
So not only did Donald Trump do a promo for his appearance at Diamond's funeral, like we all do. We all do that. I mean, whenever we're going to appear at a funeral, we all do a video promo for, hey, join me. 2 days only. One at the wake, one at the burial. I'll see you there, folks.
Right.
No, you don't do that. It's completely tasteless. But, you know, Donald Trump thinks it's just an appearance that will only take 15, 20 minutes of his time. He'll be in and out. No one gets hurt.
He did say at one point, I was told this would only last about 15 minutes, but I can see it's going to last a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
What a horrible thing to say.
Really. Here's Donald Trump complaining about how long the funeral was.
They told me, I said, give me a little time, because I had a lot of people waiting for me back in a place called Palm Beach, Florida. They said, give me a little time. What do you think it'll take? Oh, about 15, 20 minutes, sir, in and out. I said, well, it could take longer. This is a little longer than 15 minutes, right?
Oh, so what he does is he complains about how long the funeral is taking, which, by the way, probably a couple of diaper changes required in the course of that funeral. But complaining how long the funeral is, which is absolutely tasteless. Yeah, all you people here to memorialize your friend, your loved one, your family member. You know, why are you taking so goddamn long? I was told that it was only going to be 15, 20 minutes. What the hell's happening here? But on top of that, then he blames his people. He's like, yeah, I was told just a quick in and out, and now it's like 3 hours, and what the fuck? What the fuck, Stephen Miller? What the fuck? Oh, my God. And they all think that's hilarious. There was all kinds of giggling, like, oh.
He's so cute.
There we go. How cute. He's complaining about the length of the funeral. And then he talked about how he didn't know Silk. He knew Diamond, but didn't know Silk. It's like saying, oh, yeah, I knew ketchup, but I didn't know mustard.
Right.
I had no idea who mustard is.
saying that at ketchup's funeral, yeah.
Right. Donald Trump admitting to never knowing Silk, even though he's met Silk at least on a couple of occasions.
You know, the world has lost one of its brightest stars, real star, but I see that we have another star who is equal to, but she stepped up and she is different. I'm serious. I thought I knew them both. I didn't. I knew Diamond, but I didn't know Silk at all. I just learned about Silk. You're fantastic. You're going to carry on beyond anybody's wildest imagination.
Donald Trump has met Silk. He just doesn't know who she is, hasn't bothered, and then admits that right in front of her. Like, yeah, we've met. I'm aware of Diamond, but who the fuck are you? Oh, now I know. You're the one who performed CPR on your sister when she was dying. I get it.
Right.
So this is the real clip, I think. This is the real big takeaway from the funeral, as far as non-funeral things go, because it turned into just another Trumpism airing of grievances. And when Silk got up to talk, she talked about her sister, obviously, quite a bit. But then she started talking about how her sister died because someone shedded the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, into her somehow. Like, this is an actual thing. Like, if you give a vaccine to one person and they bump into someone else, that other someone else is going to suddenly be vaccinated somehow.
Right. Be infected by the vaccine.
By the vaccine. So here's Silk talking about how Diamond was killed by the vaccine, the poison known as the COVID vaccine.
And another thing, instead of asking if Americans are vaxxed or unvaxxed, the real question to ask is, are Americans being poisoned? In the wild, when they want to depopulate and sterilize a large group of animals, they usually inject one animal. And then that one animal infects the rest of the animals. So technically, And according to the science, it doesn't matter if you're vaxxed or not. As long as the gain of function allows one injected person to transfer and infect another person, and that person infect another person, eventually everyone will be affected in one way or the other. So, in case some of you have been hiding under a rock or still stuck in denial, people are dropping dead around here. And nobody's talking about it. They're dropping dead suddenly and unexpectedly. The catchphrase is SAD, S-A-D, sudden adult death syndrome. Many call it a conspiracy theory. I call it murder.
No, she just called it a catchphrase too. So
don't be stuck in the now, Bob. Whatever that means.
All right, you know what? Don't get vaccinated. Fine. But you know
what?
Do what
you want.
Now what this is it's not just a battle against the vaccine. It's a battle against people who are vaccinated. It's like, yes, don't go near those people who are vaccinated. You know what? I'm fine with that. Stay away.
You had to have seen by now the videos of people faking having the shakes as a side effect of the vaccine.
Yes.
And then now the parody posts by liberals of things. Since I got the vaccine, my protein shakes have never been smoother.
I'm sorry. These people who are posting videos of themselves with tremors.
Fake tremors, yeah.
This is either one of two things. It's either a fraud or it's people with mental health issues.
Or foreign interference, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, it could be any number of things, but it's not the vaccine. And if it is one of the
real.
If it is one of the vaccine, it's an extreme, extreme outlier. But what people are suggesting, just based on the visual aspect of these videos, is probably fraud.
Yeah.
But going back to Diamond's death.
Yes, yes.
The word is that she died of heart disease. And
a typical complication of long COVID, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Thousands of people die from heart disease every day. I've seen numbers in the range of about 3,000 people die every day of heart disease.
Wow.
The number one cause of death in the United States is heart disease. Risk factors include genetics, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, smoking, lack of exercise, alcohol abuse, etc. But as I wrote on Twitter, Dr. Silk MD's expert diagnosis is the COVID vaccine. And not just the COVID vaccine. Getting the COVID vaccine, I don't know, magically contact, from someone, through being in contact with someone who's received it. So that...
And disinformation on Twitter, for example, has never been more rampant than it is now under Elon Musk. Musk is allowing all of this bullshit, and it's just gotten wild, wildly ridiculous. And it's scary, really, because there are so many people, perhaps millions, who believe this.
Yeah. This is an obvious situation where they want it to be the COVID vaccine. So they're saying it's the COVID vaccine, and it's not. It's like Marjorie Taylor Greene tweeted, or she quote tweeted Silk's remarks about the vaccine.
Of course she did.
Yeah. I demand an immediate investigation into COVID vaccines and the dramatic increase of people dying suddenly. Mm-hmm. This can no longer be ignored and is not political. Yeah, you know what? It is political.
The people who are dropping like flies are those who are not vaccinated. That's a fact.
Yes, the people who are dropping like flies are people who are getting COVID and dying.
That's correct.
But there are also lots of people dying every day. It's just one of those things that people do. People die. People get heart disease. People get cancer. People get all kinds of other ailments that kill them. They're shot. They're murdered. I mean, to immediately jump to some sort of conspiracy theory where it's some sort of gain of function vaccine shedding is just propaganda. It's just simpleton belief in nonsense. Hocus pocus.
Mask.
Yeah.
wear your mask, wash your hands. This ain't over. To recap the good news, though, well, first of all, we did not hear from the judge, so we don't know if he's approved the release yet.
Five.
Maybe we'll find out.
Four.
Maybe we'll find out during the shadow docket.
Three.
And we haven't heard from Fonnie Willis whether she's going indict today, possibly Trump. But we did hear that classified documents were found in Mike Pence's home, so we have that.
If she doesn't indict, it is because the grand jury recommended that there be no indictments. But the word to NBC News is there will be prosecutions coming from this grand jury.
Yep, yep, yep.
So, and that's the word on background. They didn't name a source specifically, but yeah, they're looking at prosecutions. So we'll see. Right. It's just like, oh, fuck. Fuck. Well, we're going to be back tomorrow, obviously, with an interview show. I'll be talking to Justin Rosario from The Banter at thebanter.substack.com. Finally getting around to talking to Justin on the show.
Oh, and so, you guys will have a heyday with whatever we find out later today.
Yes, indeed. It's going to be a fun one. Absolutely. Yes, indeed. Okay, so the Shadow Docket's coming up next on our Patreon page, bobseskashow.com or patreon.com/bobseskashow. Or if you want to go to bobseska.com, you can click the all caps link just below the logo at bobseska.com. Sign up for $5 a month, and then you can listen to the Shadow Docket. We'll see you over there, folks. Bye-bye.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. Send me a kiss by wire. Baby, my heart's on fire. If you refuse me, honey, you lose me, then you'll be left alone. Oh, baby, telephone and tell me I'm your own.
Yeah.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.